All right. Welcome to the Integrate This podcast, where we explore politics, economics, philosophy, and current events from a heterodox integral perspective. I'm your host, Brian O'Doherty, author of the Brodoland blog at brodoland.wordpress.com.
And I am Marshall Eon. I'm an entrepreneur, and I work with the Enneagram, Integral Theory, and the Diamond Approach. And I run the Transapocalyptic Oasis Facebook group.
Best integral Facebook group out there, right?
Oh, thank you. You're so sweet.
Yeah, well, so today we decided we're going to talk about COVID-19. And since that is sort of been our life for the last 6 months. And I should mention also that I know it's been a pretty big gap since the last podcast. I've kind of regrouped a little bit and brought Marshall on to co-chair and kind of be my teammate on this as we go forward. So it'll be me and him going forward, which I think is great. Thank you for doing that, Marshall.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to causing lots of mayhem.
Yeah. Yes, sir. So there's been a lot of posts on the Facebook group about COVID. There seems to be a lot of different reactions to it, a lot of different takes, good and bad. Where do you want to start with this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we could talk about the conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. talk about the politics, mm-hmm. The virus itself, the response, like what we're supposed to do. There's a lot of stuff.
Right. Let's talk about the conspiracy theories. I think that's kind of an interesting place to begin.
I agree.
Because right from the very outset, it was like, boom, boom, boom with the conspiracy theories. And you really didn't know what's right, what's wrong, it's pretty far out there, but some of it sounds pretty reasonable.
Well, it seems like some of the more outlandish ones have kind of faded away, like the 5G.
Yeah, right. Yeah, how 5G could actually cause a virus is a little bit beyond me, but...
Well, it didn't cause a virus. The virus was made up. Actually, the symptoms were being caused by 5G okay. frying our lungs or whatever.
Right.
Except it can't even penetrate past the skin. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even go through walls. So
let's start with the first sort of, I guess the biggest one is like the one that most people believe, who believe in any of these, is probably that that the virus was engineered in a lab in China.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is one that I subscribe to, actually, for a long time. And still do to a degree. I mean, I believe it. I could believe it. It's not like I'm not saying that, yes, that's it, but I believe that that could have been the origin. You know, it's possible. It's still within the realm of possibility in my mind.
Yeah. There was some story about some woman, who was working in a lab in Wuhan. And do you know what I'm talking about?
I haven't heard that particular story. But go on, let's hear it.
Oh, China bat expert says Wuhan lab wasn't source of new virus. But then she went dark. Her name is Shi Zhengli, Chinese mm-hmm. virologist who researches mm-hmm. SARS-like coronaviruses of bat origin.
And yeah, so she sampled a bunch of coronaviruses and found that this one didn't match any of the coronaviruses that bats typically have. Which could mean either that it didn't come from a bat or that it was engineered and stuck into a bat.
Yeah, I don't know. She wanted Trump to apologize for claiming that the virus leaked from the lab. But I mean, this is China. I mean, we can't really trust anything that comes out of China, right?
Not unless it serves the interests of the Chinese Communist Party.
Right.
You know, if it serves their interests, then I'm sure it's true or not, it's at least going to serve those interests.
But, yeah. So I don't know. What's the latest? Does anybody know where the hell this thing came from?
I don't think anyone does, other than geographically it came from China. But as far as, you know, what the cause was, I don't think there's, I don't think we're 100% sure either way. I do recall, in a conversation, I think it was on Joe Rogan, his name's escaping me, that professor that he always talks to, Brett Weinstein. And Brett Weinstein was saying that that in his mind, the evidence did point to some sort of in the lab creation. And the reason he gave was that there had been found strands of DNA in the virus that couldn't have got there naturally.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if that information has since been revealed to be false or not. I couldn't find anything online other than a blanket news consensus that that's a myth and that the coronavirus was not engineered in a lab. That's sort of the, if you go out there and Google this stuff, you'll find like tons of that, right? And it's really hard to find information otherwise. Unless you're in some conspiracy Facebook group or something. So I don't know. I don't know, but personally, and you may think differently, but for me, I certainly wouldn't put it past China to be working on something like this. I mean, every country, every major nation is working on biological weapons. That's not news to anyone. I don't think it's a far-fetched conspiracy theory to say that China would be working on something like this and that it is possible that that the virus escaped the lab either intentionally or unintentionally, but very likely intentionally because I don't know if you know this, but there actually have been incidences in the past of Chinese scientists selling lab animals to wet markets like that.
Wow.
And China, of course, they come down really hard on that when they find it, but there have been some cases of that in the past.
Yeah, but they also found that so they thought the wet market was the source of the virus, but then there's a study by Chinese scientists that found roughly a third of the earliest hospitalized victims, including the first, had never visited the market. So China's Center for Disease Control ruled that out as the pandemic's place of origin.
Interesting. Well, and it's just really hard to know. I mean, because we could take China at their word and that's fine, but they could also be just saying whatever works best for them because you know, China is not, it's not like China has any international interest in telling the truth.
Right. Which then sort of brings us to, the World Health Organization.
Yep.
Who it seems like was providing cover for China.
Mm-hmm.
Which is then why I guess Trump defunded them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is where it starts to get political.
Yeah.
So you have, because anytime Trump does anything to anytime Trump's involved in anything, you better believe that it's the wrong move.
Right.
At least according to
half the country.
Half the country, right? It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, anything, right? Making peace with North Korea, making peace between Israel and the Middle East. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. It's bad.
Right. So he, so the World Health Organization covered for China, and Trump got upset with them and withdrew funding, and everybody said how terrible it is that Trump doesn't care about world health. And, but none of them really recognized the way that the World Health Organization screwed up. Mm-hmm. It always becomes about Trump. Mm-hmm. And making Trump look bad, which is weird because Trump makes himself look bad, you know.
Enough, yeah.
He does
plenty of his own damage. It's not like he needs any help there.
Right. And so I find the whole conversation around hydroxychloroquine, HCQ, mm-hmm. to be incredibly frustrating.
Yep.
Because in the beginning, there was some sort of promising news about it. Some countries had success, but then Trump touts it and...
Oof.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and if you remember, so the thing that tipped me off almost immediately was very early on, Trump starts to close the borders. Mm. I mean, I think it's as early as either late February or early March, I think he started, especially from China, mm-hmm. and then later from Europe. But I mean, relatively quickly, like early on, to the point where Democrats, his opponents, were, you know, saying that he was being racist and he was, you know, discriminating against Chinese people and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you can remember, like, and you know, Nancy Pelosi's encouraging people to visit Chinatown, all this stuff, and go out and party and have fun and all this. And this is like in March, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to turn around, and now all you hear is there was no reference to that earlier time, those first couple months when Trump was acting proactively. There's no reference to any of that in the news. You can't even, I mean, good luck finding it, right? But it's all about him not doing enough. You know, him. Now the big thing is this Woodward book comes out.
Yeah.
And it's all about how Trump knew it was going to be really, really bad, but he did nothing and all this stuff. And you're just like,
January 20th. Yeah. Intelligence briefing, top secret intelligence briefing, Oval Office, January 28th. Discussion turned toward the novel coronavirus outbreak in China.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the biggest national security threat you face in your presidency, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien told Trump. This is going to be the roughest thing you face. Matthew Pottinger, Deputy National Security Advisor, agreed. He told the president that after reaching contacts in China, it was evident that the world faced a health emergency on par with the flu pandemic of 1918, which killed an estimated 50 million people. So this was January 28th. 10 days later, Trump called Woodward and revealed that he thought the situation was far more dire than he had been saying publicly. This is
deadly. But now here's the thing. If you go now, it's easy to look at 2020 and go, well, he didn't say enough, you know, or whatever. But just imagine in late January, early February, if Trump had actually said those things in public, you know, in a speech, he would have been read the riot act up left, right, center. That people would have been saying, oh, you're catastrophizing. Oh, you just want to, you know, it would have been right. I mean, it was bad enough when he actually started to take action, which wasn't that far after when he started, you know, banning travel and all that. And everyone was all over him about it. Just imagine if he had been more, more vocal about the real threat.
Yeah.
So.
But he said, I wanted to always play it down. Why does he want to play it down?
Why does he want to play it down?
To not. Yeah. I mean, what's the most generous interpretation of that?
Well, I think the most generous interpretation would probably be to not create a complete panic.
Panic, right.
Because here's the other thing too is, let's say he didn't play it down. What would the result of that? Would we have been any more prepared?
Well, I mean, here's what Woodward says. Trump never did seem willing to fully mobilize the federal government and continually seemed to push problems off on the states.
Mm-hmm.
It says there was no real management theory of the case or how to organize a massive enterprise to deal with one of the most complex emergencies in the United or complex emergencies the United States had ever faced. So, I mean, that's true, right? Like Trump... Mm-hmm. Trump really just handed this off to the states.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
And I'd read this thing in the Vanity Fair about Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner had a secret testing plan. It was going to be a aggressive, coordinated national COVID-19 response. And it just somehow got buried.
Right.
So there was a plan. They involved people like Mark Andreessen, Silicon Valley investor. So Kushner had all these different experts involved. Plan called for the federal government to coordinate distribution of test kits, so they could be surged to heavily affected areas, oversee a national contact tracing infrastructure, propose lifting contract restrictions on where doctors and hospitals send tests, allowing any laboratory with capacity to test any sample, propose a massive scale-up of antibody testing to facilitate a return to work, called for mandating that all COVID-19 test results from any kind of testing taken anywhere be reported to a national repository, as well as to state and local health departments, proposed establishing a, quote, national sentinel surveillance system with, quote, real-time intelligence capabilities to understand leading indicators where hotspots are arising and where the risks are high versus where people can get back to work. So... So there was a nationwide plan, but it said Trump was worried about the stock market. I mean, this is Vanity Fair. Okay. Take this all with a grain of salt, but he said Trump feared that more testing would lead to higher case counts and more bad publicity. But also Deborah Birx, the White House's coronavirus response coordinator, was reportedly sharing models with senior staff that optimistically and erroneously, it would turn out, predicted the virus would soon fade away. So Trump was getting an optimistic view from Deborah Birx. Trump was also worried about more testing, creating higher case counts, more bad publicity, affecting the stock market. I mean, all this stuff seems pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can believe all that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems accurate that Trump would be most concerned about his own re-election, right?
Yes. Yes, but so would any politician, I think.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think that's... Let's put it this way. I don't think that's unique to Trump in any way.
Yeah, and I guess... Well, re-election in a time like this would mean like they've got the virus under control. And apparently he was listening to Deborah Birx saying this thing's going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and so what ends up happening though is it starts spreading in the U.S. and it spreads, obviously it spreads in the big cities, right? Mm-hmm. And different states kind of handled it differently for the most part.
Right.
You know, some states have been more draconian than others. There were, you know, New York was a freaking disaster. With people who were testing COVID positive being sent back to nursing homes. And so they had terrible, terrible statistics, terrible death rates in nursing homes in New York and in other states. But if you take like Oregon, so where I live, right? And, you know, we've been shut down for 6 months now. And for the first couple of months, it was weird. It was like zombie world. I mean, there was just like no traffic. It was just like really, really weird. Yeah. But that started, you know, people started coming back to life and living in this new normal where everyone's social distanced and everyone wears a mask and all that stuff. Well, okay. You know, there've been around, I think in Oregon, I think it's 400 and some odd deaths, maybe total.
Okay.
And about halfway through this pandemic, you know, at first, when it first came out, when it first came and we shut the state down and, you know, everyone was super, I was totally on board with everything. I mean, I was, you know, masking up and we shut down our office for a while. So everyone was working from home and, you know, I was taking every single precaution that you were, you know, supposed to take. And then as time goes on, to this day, I don't know a single person who's had COVID. I don't know a person who's been in contact with a person who's have COVID. I do know maybe like, you know, 3 degrees of separation or, you know, something like that. I do know of a couple of those, you know, mm-hmm. But the amount, the infection rate, I mean, I don't know. It's at least anecdotally, and this is totally anecdotally, but you know, it's anecdotal, but it's also anecdotal to everyone that I talk to. Right. So right. It's like, where's this virus? You know, where is it?
So maybe you just got lucky.
Maybe I did.
I mean, there was someone in the transapocalyptic oasis who lost her grandfather to COVID.
Yeah. And that's the thing though. And now we can get into kind of like, you know, some of the statistics, some of the death statistics and stuff like that. But this is a virus that primarily affected the old, the elderly.
Yeah, the elderly and the...
immune compromised.
Immune compromised, right.
Yeah. So, so for example, you know, our schools have been shut down. Our kids can't play sports. Life has come to a standstill. Anything that could possibly, you know, induce any amount of joy in a young person is shut down. Unless you're protesting, then it's okay. If you're protesting, right.
Well,
have at it.
But only protesting, you know, racial injustice, not protesting yes. lockdowns.
Yeah, I mean, if you're with Patriot Prayer or something, forget about it. But if you're protesting racial injustice or something like that, then
that doesn't spread the virus. Only protests against the lockdown spread the virus.
Well, because as you know, racial injustice is a national health crisis.
Right, and it's starting to seem like the virus itself is racist.
That's right. Yeah, because it disproportionately affects people of color.
Right.
So you have all of this, and especially, you know, because, and I, you do too, but, you know, you live in a left coast state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing about left coast states is they're only left coast in the urban and suburban areas of those states. And so if you're like me and I'm, you know, I'm in the trades. So a lot of the people I hang out with aren't of that persuasion at all. And people are getting tired, very, very tired of what's happening. And so that, I think that plays into the COVID, the sort of disbelief around COVID, the, you know, the sort of anti-mask contingent, the, you know, because it has become so political, anything that our governor, Kate Brown, does or says is going to be met with derision by a good half of the state.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I think the thing with masks is really interesting. I was in a, what store was it? Oh, it was a Crosscut. So it was like a, you know, where you go buy wood.
Yeah.
Hardwood and stuff. And I was in there and some old guy comes in and he's got his mask down below his nose. And the person behind the counter says, Hey man, you gotta put that over your nose. And he says something like, oh, well, that doesn't affect you. That just affects me. You know, because he's saying, I'm covering my mouth. My nose where I'm breathing is not affecting you. That's just affecting me.
Okay.
And the guy's like, no, it doesn't matter. These are the rules. You gotta cover that. And the guy went off. I mean, the customer, the guy with the,
right.
I mean, he just lit into this guy behind the counter talking about his constitutional rights.
My freedom. Yeah. I got a right to do whatever I want in your private business.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, he just went off. He was mad. He was really, really mad.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. This has become like an issue of freedom, personal freedom, and
right. Well, and here's, so my take on it is, wear a mask or don't wear a mask, but you know, places of business are not, you know, public, or not. I mean, I shouldn't say they're not public. What I mean is that if they want to make a rule that says you got to wear a mask to go in there, then that's up to them. They can make a rule that says you got to wear a mask to go in there.
Right.
Now, the argument for the other side is, well, they're only doing that because the government mandates it. Well, maybe, but.
No, I mean, if I was running a business, if I was running a public business like that.
It's a liability issue.
People to feel safe.
Yeah. Well, and it's a liability issue too. If the government mandates to you as a business owner that you have to have masks at your place of business and you don't, and someone gets sick and they trace it back to your place of business, you're fucked.
Yeah. But even just like as a business owner, you know, I want customers to feel safe in my store. Even if I personally don't feel, you know, I'm personally like a risk taker. Risk prone.
That's that's a little bit higher level of development there that you're speaking.
What do you mean?
Oh, just concern for others versus concern for.
Okay.
A wider degree of concern rather than just.
Yeah, well, we got to talk about it. It's an integral podcast, right?
Yes.
Ego.
Yeah, I know. We will get to that. I just wanted to kind of hash through all these little different layers.
Masks. I mean, I wear a bandana, like a red bandana around my face, like an outlaw.
Mm-hmm.
Wild West. And I was thinking about investing in a black cowboy hat.
Mm, there you go. You know, that'd look good.
Go with the look.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I know it's not like, it doesn't really provide that much protection for me.
No, it doesn't. And so that's the other argument about the masks is, you know, it doesn't really protect you. But here's the thing is, that's not the point. You know, it's not about you. It protects other people from you. That's the point.
Yeah, basically it's the droplets, right? Because you don't just say it, you spray it.
And it does provide a small margin of protection to you.
Something.
Something's better than nothing, right? But it does provide a small measure of protection, but not large. It's like, I can't remember what the exact numbers were, but it's on the order of like 10 or 15% or something.
Not bad. But, and then if you got an N95, then.
Well, that's a different story. Yeah. That's a different story.
I found a guide on how to create your own N95s.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We supply N95s to all of our employees and stuff like that, but
right.
I mean, so yes, having that level of protection of course is different. And, but you know, what people are mandating is not that. What states are mandating is not that level of protection. What they're mandating is just wear anything, wear a bandana, wear whatever, something. Yeah. Something covering your face. Well, like I said, that doesn't really help you. It just helps protect other people from you.
Yeah.
Which of course is the whole point. Because if you get everyone to wear masks and everyone is protected from the individual use around, right? Well, then the thing's not going to spread.
Right. Makes sense. They've been doing it in Asian countries for decades.
Yep. So,
but over here, it's everybody's like, my freedom.
Yeah, I've lived a good
portion. Suddenly we're questioning like, well, do masks really stop, you know, the transmission? And suddenly everybody's an infectious disease expert. And
well, yeah.
I read on Facebook.
So
I saw a video of a guy blowing vapor out and the vapor just, you know,
yeah,
the mask doesn't stop the vapor.
Right. And so here's the thing is like you just mentioned, there are countries, especially in Asia, where mask wearing is already part of the culture. And I've lived in Japan for a good chunk of my life. And and at first I thought it was really weird. when I would get on a train, and especially in the middle of flu season, you'd get on a train and maybe half the people are wearing face masks. And it's just like, it's just odd. It just looks really strange to someone who's never seen that before.
Yeah.
But after a while, and after figuring out why people do it, because if you live in a place like Tokyo, it's really crowded. And especially on those trains, you're like, I mean, you're literally face to face with people. It's, there's no such thing as personal space in that situation. So wearing a mask is almost like, it's like an additional barrier that helps you create space. So a lot of people wear masks in Japan, not so much because they're sick or because they, you know, they're trying to prevent catching anything. They're just, it's just a barrier. It's just another layer of distance.
Yeah.
You know, that they can create. But it's also, you know, if you, when I was an exchange student, I was young 17-year-old exchange student in Japan, and I caught a cold. And the first thing my host mother did was hand me a mask so that when I went to school on the bus and on the subway, I would have a mask. Now, I didn't wear it because I thought it was weird, but she gave it to me. I remember very clearly her, take this, you know. So it is, you know, it is part of cultures, and it's considered polite, you know, it's part of just being a polite member of society. You're not spreading your germs all around, right? You're
concerned for other people, right?
Yeah. So I'm not against the culture of wearing a mask. I think it's awesome. I think it's really good. You know, it shows, it's just like the culture of washing your hands after going to the bathroom, you know.
Yeah.
Would we say, it's my freedom. I'm
yeah.
I'm not gonna wash my hands after going to the bathroom. It's like, okay,
washing your hands after you're going to the bathroom. You know,
it's gross, dude. Okay. So I kind of see it like that.
You could have all these people saying how like good fecal matter is for health and how exactly. It stimulates the immune system and how soap is oppressive and. They're trying to control us with their soap.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just shows you kind of the level of ridiculousness that can be conjured up with this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is where the developmental levels comes in.
Yeah. So you were mentioning earlier about, an integral life, podcast or something where they were talking
there was a whole discussion on integral life from the Vertical Development Academy, which is, it looks like Bina Sharma and Suzanne Cook Gruder.
Okay, right. Yes.
Yeah, so they were just going through the different stages, and of course the self-centric stage. Mm-hmm. Which is only I matter, right?
Right.
My freedom. My freedom, my rights, my autonomy. I'll do what I want.
Me. Yeah.
And it's amazing how many people are operating from this stage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in our integral communities, you know?
Right. Yes. Yeah, it is amazing. And it makes you wonder, you know, because some of these people are people that I consider to be very, very smart along other axes, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the whole cognitive line versus moral line, right?
Yeah. Or is it moral line or is it, I don't know what, I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's, yeah, it is.
Well, the moral is interesting. What we ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's no concern for, I mean, they would say, well, we're concerned about everybody's freedom, not just our own.
Right.
Which is a nice little rhetorical twist to justify a very self-centric.
Well, at the base of it, I think there is a belief that, so here's what it is. I don't think the anti-masker sort of group. I don't think that they're anti-masker because they're necessarily self-centered. Right. I think it's more, they believe that, and because I've seen them talk about it, and this is sort of what I'm gleaning, is that they believe that there is a conspiracy, basically, to, it's like the slippery slope, right? Okay, first it's, we're going to make everyone wear a mask. And then it's, we're going to make everyone take a vaccine. And then it's, we're going to put a chip in everyone that records whether or not they've taken the vaccine. And if they haven't taken the vaccine, then there are going to be these X number of social.
And we're going to put them in the boxcar.
Put them in a boxcar, or, you know, just, you know, ostracize them somehow socially. Like, you can't have access to this, that, or the other. Right. So I think it is the idea that one in general, they question the effectiveness of the mask in the first place. So there's this, why are you making me do something that has no real effect, right? And then second is, this is just a, you know, another, let's turn up the temperature on the boiling frog thing.
Yeah.
Where here we are, it's lukewarm, and they're just going to notch it up another degree, wear a mask, right?
Right.
So I think that's what's at play there. I don't necessarily think it's coming from a self-centered, it could be for some people, but I don't think that that's like the majority of people. So the problem I have with those sort of analyses that a lot of people in Integral Ivory Towers make is that they have a tendency to kind of oversimplify and, did that just fall back behind me? Looked like it.
Oh, that picture. I don't know.
That's what that sound was. I think it fell.
Well,
anyway.
Now it's really falling.
Now it's really falling. Perfect. So, what was I saying? So I think there's a tendency in the especially in the sort of what I always refer to as integral elites or the integral ivory tower, that the people in your neck of the woods in Colorado, they have this, I think they have a tendency to sort of look down on the lower levels. Mm. And every level is, you know, important, and all of them are, you know,
transcend and include.
And of course, you know, the important thing is just to be healthy at the level that you're at, and da, 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 da. And then they'll say all that. Right. And, you know, all of them are very good at sort of pointing that out. Right. But then in the next sentence, they'll go and they'll be like, oh, you're just some red, blah, 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 blah. And like, it's a, like an epithet, right? You know, like, or, you know, and they'll, they do this mostly to, well, they do this a lot to politicians and to rednecks. They like to bash on rednecks, but.
Yeah.
But anyway, I see that a lot. And I think that's one of those, it's sort of an elitism. It's that's very common in any leading edge has that, I think, to a degree. Whether it's, I mean, it doesn't really matter, Integral or anywhere else.
So you see that showing up in terms of an attitude towards anti-maskers and...
Right. An attitude toward anti-maskers that assumes that they're doing it from a lower level of development, per se.
Okay.
Right? So they're saying, you know, they're saying, okay, my freedom, you know, that's a selfish, that's a self-centered red level of development reaction. Well, okay, maybe it is. But then again, maybe not. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's more nuanced than that. Maybe it's more complex than that.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's sort of a green distrust of hierarchy and authority.
It could be. Right. Or it could be a fully integral reaction that's fully nuanced and comes from different levels, all, you know, included. So, you know, they're accessing red, they're accessing blue, they're accessing, all, you know, so maybe it would be helpful if you went through all those stages and how that, how, you know, the Integral Life podcast, like, actually said they react, because I think, I think that would.
So,
shed some light on what I'm trying to say here.
So here we've got the self-centric stage, surviving, protecting, feeling invincible. Nothing can happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Hoarding food and supplies without concern for other people. Hiding out in bunkers. Buying weapons. You think there's a little bit of a subtle looking down on here?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's thick. It's really thick, isn't it?
Poo-pooing advice or rules for physical distancing / PPE wear. Blaming foreign sources for its spread. Treat those that succumb with it contempt. It's their fault. And fleeing secretly without concern for impact on others. So, self-centric stage. A 60-year-old Chinese-American man was attacked by two women while jogging in Naperville, Illinois. According to his daughter, they allegedly threw a log at him, accused him of having the virus, spat at him, and told him to go back to China.
Mm. Ethnocentric.
So they're claiming this is the self-centric.
Oh, really? Interesting. Okay. Why? Just because of the... Why? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's selfish or something. They said it's...
Well, they attack him because he's Chinese, right?
Yeah, but then in the next one, they talk about the group-centric, and they say the Chinese are responsible.
Okay.
Follow the rules. Do as you're told. Get good advice from a trusted source. Use solutions that are handed down. Care for your own tribe. Sacrifice self for all within group. Pray. Pay your tithe. Trust in God. We will be saved. And if you get it, it's God's will. God doesn't want you to get infected, you won't. And here's an example from Twitter. I truly believe the Dems worked with the Chinese to release the virus, and in doing so, intentionally hurt the economy, which America had at record highs, not to mention risking the health of the world. So basically, somebody presumably... a Republican saying the Dems are working with the Chinese to hurt the economy, to make Trump look bad, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Right. So my team always right. Basically.
Yeah.
Sure.
And here's where he quotes, it looks like he's quoting Trump here. January 22nd, we have it totally under control. It's one person coming in from China. It's going to be just fine. February 25th, I think that's a problem that's going to go away. They have studied it. They know very much. In fact, we're very close to a vaccine. February 27th, one day, it's like a miracle. It will disappear. March 2nd, a lot of things are happening. A lot of very exciting things are happening, and they're happening very rapidly. March 8th, we have a perfectly coordinated and fine-tuned plan at the White House for our attack on coronavirus. So this is what he's saying is the group-centric stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
March 10th, it will go away. Just stay calm. It will go away. So there's some magical thinking happening there, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Faith in a higher power kind of stuff. Yeah.
So did Trump screw up there?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah, sure.
It's hard to, yeah.
But
it's hard
to, you know, it's,
conclusion at this
here's,
point.
But here's the thing again is, you know, Trump, so first of all, obviously Trump's not integral. Obviously he's not even green. he's lucky on a good day if he's orange.
Right.
Although I do think that he does get there sometimes.
Website. Yeah.
But yeah, I would say he's pretty firmly rooted in amber. I think that's probably where he is most of the time.
Yeah, us versus them.
Us versus, yeah, exactly. Well, and make America great again and America first and da 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 da, right? So, I mean, that's kind of where his center of gravity lies. And I think he does dip into red quite a bit. I mean, he's a narcissist and all that jazz. So for anyone who's an integral, I mean, you just got to recognize that stuff. And if you recognize it, then you kind of know what he's going to do. And it shouldn't surprise you. It doesn't surprise me. You know, I've been watching Trump this whole time. I voted for Trump in 2016. First time I voted in, oh gosh, the first time I had voted in 12 years. And I voted for him because I wanted him to do exactly what he's doing. I wanted him to upset the apple cart.
Are you an accelerationist?
I don't know. I wanted him to be a bull in a china shop.
Okay.
And he is. That's exactly what he is. And he hasn't surprised me one bit. So I'm pretty happy actually with how it turned out.
But even, bullet, you don't really want a bull in a china shop during a pandemic.
No, you don't. But of course, I didn't know there was going to be a pandemic.
Right. So are you happy with the results there?
No, I'm not happy with how he handled the pandemic. I'm not happy with how the U.S. government, I'm not happy with how the state government is handling the pandemic either. And right. Those for the, and that includes my own state, which is very fully in Democratic hands. So I don't think I don't think anyone handled it correctly at any level. I actually am one of those that likes the way that Sweden handled it.
Right. They didn't do a lockdown, right?
They did not.
Yeah, I was about to say, it seems like Sweden flattened its curve without a lockdown. It seems like a lot of people are now saying that the lockdown was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had no lockdown. They had no mask mandate. What they did do was they took measures to protect their vulnerable people. They protected the elderly who were in homes and stuff like that, told people who were above a certain age or had a certain risk profile to stay home. But for everyone else, it was pretty much just life as normal. And now if you compare them with other European countries, they did have a peak. It was a very sharp peak, but then a very sharp decline after that. And now they have fewer deaths per million in their population than practically any European country. So whatever they did worked, and it didn't mean that they had to shut down their entire country.
Yeah. Sweden, has few more excess deaths, but less than the UK. And they're generally happy with their government and their decisions that they've made, and they have less economic damage. This is according to, what's his name? Dr. Z-Dog.
Dr. Z-Dog? Is that Zero Hedge?
No, Z-Dog is, what's his name? Z-Dog MD. His name is, I can't even figure out his name. Oh, it's Dr. Zubin Damania, MD. He's a UCSF Stanford trained internist, founder of Turntable Health, an innovative primary care clinic and model for health 3.0. He said, during a decade-long hospitalist career at Stanford, I experienced our dysfunctional healthcare system firsthand. So he's kind of a disruptor, you know. He wants to totally do healthcare differently, and so he's interesting. And he's basically saying that lockdowns are a dumb strategy.
Mm-hmm.
He said targeted, as we've learned more, targeted approaches that save lives while doing less economic and social damage may be the answer.
Which, interestingly, is Trump's line. Lockdowns are a dumb strategy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as Trump being the president, it's not like he can tell the state governors don't do lockdowns. So it's interesting to me, you know, there's this expectation, especially in our country, which is a little bit different than other countries. You know, like Sweden, for example, Sweden is smaller than probably, you know, a handful of our states, right?
Yeah.
So there's this idea that, you know, that we should be relying on the federal government to do all these things for us. But actually, that's not really how our government works. So in one sense, the fact that that Trump left it to the states, I actually don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
You know, by nature, I'm a panarchist and all that kind of stuff. So for me, the more local control there is, the better. So I would prefer that states handle it over the federal government. I would prefer that counties handle it over the state government. I would prefer that cities handle it over the county governments. So I'm, you know, as granular as you can make that, I think is better. But
Z-Dog talks about Sweden. he says they're wearing masks. They're just choosing to.
Right. Yeah.
They're social distancing voluntarily because they're not idiots. Mm-hmm. They're not traveling around the world.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot, that's most people.
Right.
Even, I mean, I think, you don't need a mandate for a lot of that stuff. So no, I'm, you know, as far as how it was handled, by our governments, I do not approve, but, I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, Trump's fault. I don't know if you can fault him specifically.
Yeah, it seems like though the electorate is, it seems like Trump is trailing Biden pretty severely.
Yeah, in the national polls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course we've seen before, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I don't pay attention to the national polls. The reason I don't pay attention to the national polls.
Disappointment with Trump's response to the pandemic.
I'm sure there is, but I think that disappointment is partisan. In other words, the people who are disappointed aren't going to vote for Trump anyway.
I think that's, I think there's more people in the center that would go maybe one way or the other.
Maybe there are, but a lot of those people in the center are going to be voting against other things that are happening. I mean, my feeling is that a lot of the anger, and you know, I don't know. We all have sort of our anecdotal experiences that kind of drive our perceptions. And my anecdotal world is, I would say, I'm surrounded by people who are mostly on the right, personally, but then online, I'm surrounded by people who are mostly on the left. So my social media and my online, I guess social world is dominated by left-wing politics. This includes most of my Facebook friends, I would say probably 80% of my Facebook friends. Cause of course for me, Facebook was initially, how I keep in touch with old friends from high school and stuff. So, you know, I'd say probably most of the people that I encounter on Facebook are left wing. And in social media that as well, Twitter, anything like that. But in my personal life, like if in my day-to-day life, it's exactly the opposite. So I get this really interesting picture. Yeah. You know, where
ping pong back and forth.
Yeah, it is very dizzying sometimes, because you know I talk to people face to face and we're talking about one thing, and then I'll go on Facebook and someone's like completely the opposite, right? So for example, in Portland, so I live in Portland, right? And there's been a lot of stuff happening in Portland, as you know. And so, you know, I have Facebook friends who are there, like they're marching or they're supporting the marchers or they're, you know, whatever. Right. And then I have, people in my day-to-day life who are also there, but on the other side, you know, they're waving flags and so on and so forth. So I guess what I'm saying is that when I think of the center to me are people who are dominated largely by people who just kind of want to be left alone. and they don't want their world turned upside down. And the world is being turned upside down and they're pissed. And so whoever they blame for that is going to be, you know, is going to lose. Whoever they blame for that is going to lose. So if they're blaming Democrats for that, they're going to vote Republican. If they're blaming Republicans for that, they're going to vote Democrat. Speaking of the center, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, personally, I think that the Democrats are not handling the situation intelligently. To me, it's not so much that, I don't think the Democrats are necessarily any worse than the Republicans. You know, I'm not like, I'm an anarchist for Christ's sake. So I'm not like wedded to one party over the other. But I do think that the Democrats have been handling, I do think that the Democrats are now firmly the party of the establishment, and that they are handling this whole election very poorly.
Say more.
They haven't learned anything from 2016, and they're just pulling out the same playbook, and they're going to lose. That's my take, for better or worse.
How are they handling the situation?
Well, for one, they were extremely slow to condemn the violence.
And so you're talking about the protests/riots.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because, and it's all interrelated, right? Because we had this COVID thing, and then Memorial Day weekend happens. George Floyd's murdered, and boom, we start having these protests. And so you have, you know, the protests are fine, but then the riots start happening, right? And at first, I mean, I think that's kind of like expected almost nowadays. It's like, you know, something like this happens, it hits the media, and there's going to be some level of rioting. But like, if you take, I mean, it's been going on for how many days now? 100 and some odd days. And the reaction from Democrats who had been up to that point, who had been saying, you can't visit your dying grandma in the hospital, you can't go to your dead grandma's funeral, and you can't go to church, right? And they're standing behind the protesters now, who are cheek and jowl in the streets, running around, you know, vandalizing property, destroying businesses, you know, assaulting and harassing people on the streets, drivers, diners, all this stuff, right?
Right. Well, the ones that are violent, right?
Right, the ones that are violent, but those are the ones that you see. They may only be, you know, 5 or 10% of the protesters, but it doesn't matter. They're the ones that are going to, that's what people are going to see, and they're going to associate that with the whole thing.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's accurate or not. That's just,
I hear you. Yeah. You're talking about public perception.
Yeah. Cause public perception is what's going to decide the election.
Right. But you don't think that, you know, Biden, I mean, he's got, Kamala Harris, has a very strong.
That was the worst choice they could have made.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, in terms of like political strategy, I mean, that sent the message that they're not going to be weak on crime, right? Because she has a very strong.
Yeah, she does, I guess.
Strong on crime. She has a strong on crime record, and that made her
not really in a good way.
It made her really unpopular with the social justice left.
And it makes her unpopular with the right as well, because she wasn't, it's one thing to be tough on crime, but it's another thing to be like a freaking crazy authoritarian. I mean, she's her record as anyway, we're kind of getting way off topic.
But that's right. Okay. I hear you. I hear you. I just think, I think the center is concerned about, you know, the left defund the police and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The center, just like you said, they just don't want their world turned upside down. They don't want the police defunded, for example. And so Kamala Harris is, Biden is basically sending the message that we're not going to be, you know, we're not going to be defunding the police here. We are the police, so to speak.
Well, and well, but what here's what I mean, basically you have Kamala running for president because Biden isn't going to last. I mean, so when they chose Kamala Harris, when they chose the VP for Biden, they were choosing the president. They, I mean, they're basically saying, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it. I mean, he might last 4 years, you know.
not with all his faculties intact. He's had a brain aneurysm twice. He's had two brain aneurysms.
Some people think Trump had a little stroke. Back.
No, he didn't.
Well, who knows?
I mean, yeah. But anyway, you know, if you have a brain aneurysm,
Trump's not, you know, the pillar of health.
It's not good. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
So anyway, what I'm saying is that first they choose Biden, which is so. I don't want to we're getting into the weeds now, but my statement from the very beginning, and I was rooting for Democrats. I really wanted Democrats to do this. I wanted them to choose someone young, like Gabbard or Yang, yeah. Or Gabbard and Yang. That would have been beautiful. And go that route, because if they had done that, they would have wiped the floor with Trump. I guarantee it. They would have won. It would have been no contest. I would have voted for that ticket. Right. But they didn't. They went with Biden, who's like, I mean, he's been in politics for 50 years. I mean, he's so old that he's on record voting against civil rights. You know, he's that old. he's one of those, I don't want my kids in a integrated school type of politicians. You know, I mean, you go back far enough and you can find things that Biden said that are just like.
Right. Which Kamala Harris hit him for in the debates.
Yeah. And so he will get hit. I mean, Trump is really good in debates. And so, I mean, that's why Biden, I would be really shocked if the Democrats allowed a debate between Biden and Trump, actually.
Oh, they will. It's happening, man. Yeah. There's several scheduled.
Yeah. Well,
so
we'll
Biden's going to try to hit him on his well, since we're talking about his pandemic response.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Biden can string a sentence together and, you know.
Did you see his, DNC speech?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of theories out there that it was pre-recorded.
Yes, there are some conspiracy theories courtesy of Rush Limbaugh and all that, but
I think that's funny.
Well, they got to try to explain it away because he did perform pretty well.
Yeah, he did.
And he was pretty fiery and energized, and so it's going to be hard to nail him with Sleepy Joe now at this point. But what's his position on the virus? Like, he wants the federal mandate on masks.
That won't happen.
And what, I mean, do you know his policy stance? Okay, me neither.
Other than the mask mandate, that's the only thing that I've heard him say over and over again, which is, yeah, I don't know.
You're against it.
Yeah, I'm against a mask mandate, a nationwide mask mandate. Yeah, I'm against that. Again, I go back to...
On the basis of what, freedom?
On the basis of,
I mean, it's the more cautious stance.
Sure, sure. But it's, I think it's, I think it doesn't, I just think it doesn't need to be mandated. I think people are, I think in general, well, I guess here's the thing is I'm like I said before, I like the way that Sweden handled it. Okay.
Yeah.
I like
they're functioning at a higher developmental level.
Higher level right? development. Just, I would agree.
Just adopt the most rational, you know, cautious choices, whereas people here make everything about autonomy and.
Yeah, and so this goes back to the reaction, you know, the reaction of the anti-maskers being, you know, coming from a lower level of development. I just think that's a bunch of hooey. I think it's a bunch of bullshit because you can have a fully integral perspective that says
sure, but we don't want to elevate all these people. I mean, sort of falsely elevate them to integral.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not, of course not. No. But what I'm saying is that I don't think that being an anti-masker necessarily is a clue.
No, of course not. But it just seems like it's an anti-authority thing.
It is. Yeah.
Like you're not going to tell me what to do. Or you're not going to tell,
yeah.
You're not going to tell us what to
you're
do.
You're not going to tell us what to do. Yeah.
Doesn't even necessarily have to be me.
Right. Right. But then, so then it becomes,
what is that a green impulse?
No. I think it's an agency impulse.
Okay.
You know, I think it's an agency impulse. So I think it's type. It's not level. It's type.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good way. It doesn't recognize authority.
Right.
Wants to reject authority.
Unearned authority.
Isn't that not like a red versus blue kind of conflict?
No, I don't think so, because you could be a blue and just say, well, that's not my authority. That's not the authority I look up to, right? So if
right.
You know.
But if they're at orange. I mean, if you've got a healthy orange streak, you're just going to be like, okay, what's the science saying? What's the most rational? Mm-hmm. Let's just do that. It's the most pragmatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Well, and that's where, I mean, so I think there are some people though at orange that might say, Orange is about looking at data and being rational and all that kind of stuff. But you can look at, it just depends on where you find your data and how you rationalize it. You can be wrong, you know, and still come up with sort of a rationalized, you know, data-driven conclusion, right?
Yeah, which would be awesome. I mean,
well, and the other, and the other
thing, those people.
Huh? Where are those?
I wish there were more of those people and not like masks don't do nothing. And
right.
There isn't even a real virus. And germ theory.
Yes. People that don't believe in germ theory anymore. Is that what you're talking about?
Conspiracy theory. Or it's a conspiracy.
Well,
to control us.
You know, it doesn't help that people don't trust the numbers.
Yeah. And the government too has been, I mean, Fauci was saying at the beginning, there's no reason to wear a mask.
Right.
Because they wanted the masks to go to
the healthcare workers, yeah.
Healthcare workers, but like, dude, you just undermined your credibility completely.
Yep.
And he regrets it, of course. And so there's really no, I mean, when you look at the whole thing, there's really no one to blame, except maybe China. But no, <I'm> just...
Yeah.
By that, I mean the communist the Chinese Communist Party.
Right.
Always blame the commies. That's safe.
Well, they are always wrong. yeah, I mean, I did want to touch a little bit on one of the issues I think that, you know, that anti-maskers and others have is the deadliness of the disease.
Okay.
Because so there was this thing that CDC came out, or
right, the 6%.
The 6%, right?
But you know, Dr. Z-Dog kind of debunked this. He said that basically the 6% was just where the death certificate, death report only reported COVID. And there were others where it, you know, it said diabetes, obesity, or hypertension, or respiratory
factors.
Distress, or cardiac arrest.
Right.
And his whole point was, well, yeah, that's what COVID does. It turns hypertension into a deadly disease. It turns diabetes into a deadly disease. It causes respiratory distress or cardiac arrest. So he was saying that that's not really an indicator of its deadliness. What he was saying is to look at the excess deaths this time of year compared to last year and the years prior.
That's a good way of approaching it, I think. But you know, I think a lot of the mistrust comes from stories like there's this the local story here in Portland about a man who had cancer and he was given 30 days to live, and he died about 30 days later. But when he died, he was positive with COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew he died of cancer. He wasn't symptomatic with COVID-19 or anything. It's just, he tested positive for it, but it was the cancer that killed him. I mean, there was no doubt that it was the cancer that killed him. But his death was counted among the COVID-19 deaths in Oregon.
Yeah, which it's because of he was saying like they just report all the factors that are present.
Right. So there's this thing, there's this dying of COVID or dying with COVID. Right. And in some places they don't count the dying with COVID. They just count the dying of. In other places they count both. Right. And so there's some kind of confusion on that. I mean, but that's the point I did make in the Facebook group is like, you know, if you have COVID and you get hit by a truck, you didn't die of COVID. You know what I mean?
Right. But it's just sort of standard for them to just put all the factors, I guess, that were present at death or something like that.
Right. So I do think that the taking the, taking the data from the years prior and sort of extrapolating.
Yeah, the excess death rate. Yeah, they talk here. He's talking about a Journal of the American Medical Association article that looked at the period from March 1st through May 30th, 3 months, right in the middle of the pandemic. They found 122,000 excess deaths in the U.S. during that time compared to previous years. And he says, okay, that's a lot of excess deaths. How many of those were actually labeled as COVID? In other words, what was the COVID-19 death rate at that time? The COVID-19 death count over that period was 30% less than the total number of excess deaths. So basically it means that COVID deaths are being underreported.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. So about 120,000, that's about 40,000 a month of excess deaths compared to years prior. But the other thing he says is some of those deaths might not be directly related to COVID. It could be things like from the lockdown, right? Like depression, mm-hmm. mental illness, suicide, stuff like that, mm-hmm. or economic turmoil, isolation, mm-hmm. Mental and social fabric disruption that's happened, economic disruption. So these are other factors. The UK, their excess death rate is higher than their tested positive COVID death rate by 20%. In Spain, it's 40% higher than their tested death rate, meaning there's a ton of excess deaths that just aren't accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a twist that makes it even more uncomfortable. During this period, traffic deaths and homicides dropped quite a bit because we're locked down. We're locked down.
Right.
So despite the drop in traffic deaths and homicides, which are major killers, the excess death rate was still really high. So it seems pretty bad.
Indeed.
But there is, you know, there is going to be more deaths from economic despair, substance abuse.
Oh, for sure. My alcohol consumption suicide. Went through the roof.
Your what?
I said my alcohol consumption went through the roof. I can only imagine the trouble that other people have had.
Yeah. So, but it does. I mean, 40,000 extra deaths a month seems pretty high. But does it justify the lockdown and all the economic turmoil?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not looking like that was the appropriate response. Of course, it's, you know, hindsight's 2020, and we didn't know, like, the, you know, the asymptomatic carriers.
Yeah, hindsight's 2020, but I remember when we started locking down, let me put it this way. It was a question, I think. Like, I don't remember lockdown being like the only solution that people were throwing out there. To me, it seemed like we basically looked at what China did and we just kind of replicated it.
Mm-hmm.
To a less authoritarian degree. I mean, we didn't like bar people in their apartment buildings.
We didn't have drones chasing people.
Weld their doors shut and stuff like that. But
drones harassing people, telling them to go home. And
yeah, no, we didn't have that. But you know, that sort of that philosophy of how to deal with it, that's an authoritarian response.
Lockdown, yeah.
I mean, and I don't think it was the right one.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it just seems like protect the vulnerable and, you know, more testing available would have been a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Give people lots of vitamin D.
Well, think about it this way. How many hundreds of billions of dollars did we spend on economic stimulus that could have just been spent on a lot of extra testing?
Yeah.
And help and like pinpointed assistance to vulnerable populations, and then just let everyone else be, let everyone else do what they're doing, because the vast majority of the population isn't, they're not going to be dying of COVID-19. It's just going to be the vulnerable part of the population. I mean, of course, there'll be outliers. You know, I have a friend of a friend of a friend, one of those third degree connections who got COVID. who he was a Navy SEAL, top shape, super fit, right? And he had a really hard time with COVID. I mean, he struggled with it for weeks. And he wasn't back to normal for several weeks. I know he lived, but you know, there are a lot of anecdotes like that where it just, it really harshly affects, you know, someone you wouldn't expect it to affect so harshly.
Right. It's looking like, the vitamin D is a fantastic intervention. It's looking like it affects people the most who are vitamin D deficient. And getting vitamin D supplements, according to the research, keeps you out of the ICU.
And where do people get a lot of vitamin D?
I don't know, man.
What continent do people get a lot of vitamin D on?
Are you going to say Africa?
Yeah. And how have their COVID rates been?
Yeah, the headlines recently are scientists baffled by lack of COVID in Africa.
And of course they've got a lot of vitamin D and they eat HCQ like candy.
Like, yeah, candy. They're all loaded up with anti-malarial drugs. Well, there goes our racist virus hypothesis.
There it goes. I mean, of course, correlation isn't causation, but geez, you think they'd be looking into that.
Yeah, well, there is good research on the vitamin D. So that's our integral takeaway.
Our integral takeaway is get lots of vitamin D and be like Sweden.
Yeah, there
you
go.
Problem solved.
And wear a mask.
Wear a mask if you're a nice guy.
It's just polite, man. But you know, find some other way to rebel against the man.
Just be polite. It's like washing your hands, you know?
Yeah, just be polite, man.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, I think we've covered all the bases.
We killed this topic.
Murdered it.
Smashed it. All right. Cool. Well, until next time then.
Yep.
Peace out.
Ciao for now.